Blog Talk Radio.
Milton, and welcome to the Metroplex Buzz. Tonight is January the 25th, 2024, and it's just two more days before we're having our first in-person legal workshop for the year 2024. I'm excited because this is the first time since the COVID that we've been able to come out to actually have something to in the public that everyone can come and ask questions and be a part of it. This workshop is going to be on Saturday, January the 27th, starting at 10 o'clock a.m. to 1 o'clock p.m. Hopefully we would be finished with everyone's questions and have answered everyone's, questions. This is a free legal workshop. And it's all about learning about small businesses, family law, estate planning, labor law, housing, eviction, and repairs and remedy. So tonight, hopefully we'll have one of our attorneys that's going to be coming on a little bit later on tonight on our podcast. So I'm excited about her. And I'll ask everyone to get their questions together because she will be on. But I wanted to just talk about some things. This is open. Tonight is an open mic. I guess you call it episode. And we're going to talk about a little bit of everything that's happening. And I want to first thank everybody for coming to my book signing on last Saturday and being a part of the documentary film. We're making a film here in Fort Dallas. Of the black leaders that was around in 1975 through 99, but it's about the leaders that today I stand with on their shoulders because of what I have accomplished. I couldn't have never did that without them. So I'm very honored to be able to talk about them in this documentary. So I'm asking everybody to stay tuned for that. And that should be ready in about another 3 months. So hopefully we can get it sooner than that. But also I'm excited to let everybody know that the book, My Power in Three, my first book I ever written, is my Christian autobiography of my life story. So it's on Kindle. It is now on Kindle, and I'm excited to let everybody know that it's there. If you want to buy the hardback, you have to go to our website and actually place your order there. But if you want to get it on Amazon, it is on the Kindle Amazon format. So I'm excited about the book signing, but I just want to thank everybody for coming out. We had a fantastic turnout, and I am so honored to have had the organization with me, CCCR, Mr. Carl Berry, and his organization, Dr. Lane, and Mr. Wortham, they all was there to support me, as well as others that has been in my life for such a long time. Norma Wade, she was there. So I'm excited about the book. I'm excited about what God has allowed me to remember and allowed me to be able to do. So I just look forward to you all getting it and reading it. But tonight, I just wanted to let you know we're still doing what we did back in 1975. We started doing all of this for the community, and it was free. And in fact, the documentary will show you, clip in our documentary, that it will show you actually a news coverage, what was sent to me by Ruth Allen. She was with Channel 5 in 1981, but she found this news clip to send to us to be a part of our documentary. And from that news clip, you will know and see how we volunteered at that time, and we have still done that for the last 42 years, volunteering to help and work in the community. So I'm excited about that, very thankful to God for that we are still able to do what we do. Our legal clinic on Saturday is also free to the public, and we're asking you to come out and listen. We have a lot of attorneys that give their time and judges that give their time, and I'm excited to have, we have about six of them that's coming out, but we have the Legal Aid of Northwest Texas. That's a team of lawyers, and it's about four of them that's coming for different, to talk about different things. We also have Candace P. Haley. Candace is the owner of Haley Law Firm, specializes in, I think, not family law, but estate planning and things like that. We will also have Carla Jackson Edwards. She's the senior attorney for the U.S. Department of Labor. So she works with the Fair Labor Standards in hiring people who may have a felony on their records or something like that and can't get housing, can't get jobs. So come out and ask questions on Saturday and write them down. And when you get there, you can ask them. But tonight I'm so excited because I've asked Candace Haley, she's the owner of Haley Law Firm, to be on here with us to sort of answer some of the questions that you all may have. Like I said, it's open. Tonight is an open mic. And I want you to know we're going to talk on and we're going to hit on also these new laws. There's 18 new House bill laws for the year of 24. And then you have 12 new Senate bills that was passed in Austin for 2024. And if you don't know what these new laws and things are, we're going to try to kind of break them down for you on Saturday. If not, we are continuing to try to do some, even some tonight or maybe this month. But we want you to know about them and learn about them. But I want to find out, I think Ms. Haley is on the line. Let me take her call because I know I asked her to come on tonight, and I should have probably asked her before. Good evening, Ms. Haley. Is this you on the with 7440?
Yes,
hello.
Ma'am, I'm here.
Yes,
can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Yes, we can.
Good deal.
Okay.
Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for I'm having time to come on the show at this last moment. I normally I ask maybe so almost a month in advance sometimes, but this has been a busy month. Like last week, I just had my book signing and documenting, so I've been really working awfully hard this week. Haley, I want you to talk with us tonight and give us a little bit of background about who you are and your specialty and how long you've been in Dallas.
Okay, sounds good. Well, again, thank you so much for having me. And I am Candace Haley. I'm actually a native of Dallas, Texas. I was born and raised in Pleasant Grove. And I went to TWU, Texas Women's University, for undergrad. And then I went to Southern University, Lawson and Baton Rouge for law school. And then I came on back home to Dallas. And I started my firm at that time, Haley Law. And as of recent, as of October of 2023, we started a new firm. It's called Haley, Bailey, and Jones. So now I have two partners that have joined me, and it's just been amazing ever since we've started, and we've been just rolling. And so one of the areas, my primary areas that I handle is probate and estate planning. And I obviously I love it. And so that deals with, you know, when a person passes away, we help their family kind of disperse their estate, and then we help them kind of resolve their estate as well. And then if there are any contests or any issues, we help resolve that as well with litigation if necessary. And then we try to come, you know, we a lot of times try to settle cases if we can, especially amongst families. And then we do estate planning, which is preparing for your incapacity or your death. And so that may be drafting your medical power of attorney, your statutory durable power of attorney, your directive to physician, which are all documents that can appoint an agent to represent you on your incapacity or also direct a physician on what to do should you have a terminal or irreversible illness. And then we also can do your trust. We can do a will. We can do your transfer on death deeds, your lady bird deeds. So there we can help you strategize to meet your goals and what type of estate planning tools you want to utilize. So that's primarily what I handle in our firm, but we also do personal injury, and we do some business and contract law as well. So we have a variety of things that we do, but I mainly do the probate and estate planning side of things.
I see. So if a person may think that because they don't have money, maybe they don't even have a job. Okay, do that person, should they still have a will?
I would say yes. And do you want me to tell you why I think yes?
Okay.
So I would say yes, they do, because you don't know how your demise may come about. Your demise may come through a personal injury accident. Now there's a wrongful death situation. And now there are funds that belong to your estate, and if you have not done a will, no one is going to know how those are supposed to be dispersed. So there's some things that you may say, you know what, if something were to happen to me, I would want to take care of. Either I may not want my children to get it because one may have some issues that they may, you know, blow through the money or be irresponsible, or I want to leave something for a particular individual. Or let's say that the demise doesn't come from a personal injury. Let's say they say, well, I don't have any money, I don't have anything. Well, they can even go do a life insurance policy and allow that to be dispersed through their will if they decided to. Or let's say that they pass away, but they were going to inherit something from a parent or that from a grandparent or someone. Well, now that without having properly planned, it's going to go based on the state of Texas. And what they say is, you know, who is going to dictate who gets what. And so I always say, just in case, you should always have a will, because you never know what you're going to inherit, what you may receive. And so that is a big reason why. But if not, if you don't have a will, then I would say if you feel that you don't need one, you at least need to properly plan your bank accounts to have, like, payable upon death to someone, something like that. Or if you have real property that you say, well, I don't really want a will, but I do have this property, well, you could do what's called a transfer on death deed. And that won't go to probate court. That'll go straight through having to provide an affidavit and a death certificate to the county, file that, and then now that property will be transferred based on who you left as a beneficiary on the transfer on death deed. So there are some options outside of a will that you can have, but I always advise people to have a will, because you think you don't have anything, but you may have more than you think.
Okay, and you said that's called a transfer in debt deed?
No, transfer on debt deed.
On debt.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay,
on
how
debt.
Do you get
so
that
you
type
die.
Deed? So you you can file that?
Uh-huh. So I would always advise that you never do it yourself and you don't use LegalZoom. I think that it's best that you do hire an attorney and allow them to explain it to you, because there are some designations on that document that need to be filled out, specifically who you want to do, who you want to be a beneficiary, and who you want to
mm-hmm.
be in the alternative. And then they are able to explain what happens afterwards and how this can impact your, you know, impact them, and what, how it impacts you while you're living, because you still get the actual designation, the transfer doesn't happen until you die. So you get to still own your property and do everything you're going to do, but upon your death, it transfers to your beneficiary that you designate in that deed.
I see, I see. Now let me ask you something. How much is your, for instance, on Saturday, when you come, if you had time to do a will, I mean, what? How long does it take to do a will or transfer of deeds and things like that? How long does it take?
Well, typically, it's a little different, because if our office does it, we say at least we could do like a 3-day turnaround or quicker, but we typically like a 3-day turnaround, so that, because we like to do a search of the chain of title, because we want to make sure that our client is deeding a property that they have rights to and they have interest in the property. So we go pull the original deed, and we also get the legal description from that original deed. And so it's important for us to locate that and then be able to draft it according to that. And then we say, okay, you can come on in the office and we can execute it for you, because we're notaries as well. And we can notarize the actual document. And then if they want us to file it, we can do that for them as well. So we usually like to do like a 3-day turnaround.
Okay. Now, Candace, let me share something with you. There may be some people there on Saturday who actually want a will. Are you all running specials, or do you have any specials you're running, you know, this month, and especially to those that come out to the workshop? You know, because I know you normally give specials. If they come to the workshop, you may give them a discount, something like that. What's going on with your firm, special, especially with wheels and for instance,
power
this, I guess she was, yes, power of attorney. Because, like, for
yes,
instance,
ma'am.
this lady who had 4 children, and she died, but nobody knew where she wanted those children, who she wanted those children to be with. So their dad was in prison, so they didn't know what to do. So, like, even if a person is maybe with low income and don't have the money to really hire an attorney, what should she do if she has children like that and she needs to have some type of power of attorney?
So what I would say is, when a person passes away, before they pass away, they can, you know, obviously do some planning. But one of the documents that's available to them is a declaration of appointment, of a declaration to pretty much appoint a guardian for a person. So the document is called Declaration of Appointment of Guardian for My Child in the Event of My Death or Incapacity. So that document, the courts will typically honor those documents when they have appointed that person. So this is a separate document that can be done. And then there's also a provision in the will that you can put to designate a guardian and who you want to have your children upon your death. And so one of the things that we are currently running for the month of for Black History Month, we're doing a new initiative where it's called Love is in the Air, and the air is spelled H-E-I-R, like your heirs. And so what we're doing is our goal is to create legacy through estate planning. And so we're trying to sign up 500 clients to participate in this, so that they can be empowered to draft their will, have a medical power of attorney, and have a non-medical power of attorney, which is called a statutory durable power of attorney. And this is typically a $1,200 value for our firm, but we're giving it away for $500. All three of those things, which would typically be $1,200, we're giving all three for $500. That is unheard of. And what we're doing, from February 1st to February 29th, that's the time to sign up. And we are trying to close it around February 29th. If there are some stragglers that kind of come in, that's totally fine, but so that we can kind of go ahead and start the drafting process after that. And then we're going to have a huge ceremony, execution ceremony. We're going to have like three of them to kind of address all of the people that sign up, so that they can execute all their documents, have their documents in hand, and feel good about having done their estate planning. And we're going to have different vendors come out. We're going to have photo booths. because we want to celebrate that they are now, they've created their legacy. Now they can kind of rest a little bit easier at night knowing they properly plan for their family. And so that starts February 1st, and people can sign up on our, we release it on February 1st, so, but people can go to our website at www.hbjlawyers.com and sign up there, or they can call our office at 972-598-0212, or they can also email us at love@hbjlawyers.com. So there's ways to sign up. And so that's one of the things we're doing right now.
Okay. And your telephone number again is 972-598-0212.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. You go kind of fast, Haley. You know,
pretty
fast.
I'm sorry.
You sound, well, I know, but, you know, they may not can write as fast as you, but you're talking, but I'm in your office is located where on Mockingbird.
Ma'am. Well, so right now we are currently on Mockingbird as of right now, but we are moving in the building. So, but we are off of Mockingbird in 35.
Okay. 1420 West Mockingbird. That's very good. I'm so proud of you and what you've done.
Thank you.
When I first met you, we were doing these workshops at the college over there at Eastfield College, and I am so thankful to my church, Mesquite Friendship, for allowing me to come to our church because sometimes we have to there's a cost if we have a legal clinic on a Saturday. On a Friday, it's no problem, but on a Saturday, I have to bring those workers back in to clean up after us or straighten up for us or whatever they may do. So I'm very thankful for people helping us as we do what we can do for the community. And, Haley, I know in the past, we had so many people that came. Do you all, for instance, if a person had to pay you every week or something like that, what do you all do to help people that may not have all the money at one time? Or somebody may say, well, I don't have that kind of money at one time. What do? You all have a payment plan for people?
Yes, ma'am. So for the actual, for the initiative, the only thing required up front is $250. And then the other $250 is actually due right before we release the documents for your review. And so you can break it down that way for that. And then if there's something that they say, you know what, right now I don't have the $250, but I want to sign up, they just need to probably let us know and we can work something out for them that fits their budget prior to the release of the documents and all of that. So we definitely can have some options for them.
Okay. And in your office, what other attorneys do you say? You say you have some personal injury?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Personal injury attorneys. And I hope I'm saying that right. And what other kind of attorneys that you have? And what is the other attorneys that you have there?
We do business law, and then we do contracts as well. So, and then anything that kind of falls under some civil issues dealing with real estate as well. So sometimes we deal with landlord-tenant issues, foreclosures, trying to sell property or deeds and things like that. And then if you're starting a business and you need some different contracts or if you need some employment things, some non-disclosures, and just formation of your business, we handle that as well.
Okay, very good. Very, very good. I'm looking forward to I always do because I learned something, too. I may be people there needing the criminal lawyer and everything else, but I always learned something from these legal clinics that I didn't know before. So I'm very glad that we have some people online and quite a few, and I just want to let them know if they have a question for you, or anything concerning what we're discussing, all they have to do is press the number 1, and I will know that they want to come online and talk with you or about what we're talking about. But I want to say this, that I am, I mean, I just think that it's so important. And I don't know, Haley, if you know about these new laws. Texas just passed quite a few new laws. And sometimes, because, I mean, the reason, one of the reasons why I'm happy about it, because I don't have to pay no more franchise tax. And a lot of people did not know that. The franchise tax has been lifted, I think, for small businesses. Did you know that?
And so I, unfortunately, and please don't hurt me or kill me, but I have not looked at all the new bills that have been released and the new laws that have been made just yet. I know they typically post them in a particular place with all of the updates, and that's where I typically get them from, but I have not had a chance to just yet. We've been kind of stuck in court and having trials since the beginning of the year, and so I haven't had a chance to, but I would definitely try to look at those before, if I can, by Saturday.
Haley, you don't have to do that. I mean, what I'm saying is that I just want people to realize there is so many new laws that's going to affect you, your children, your property. And what I'm saying, Haley, people need to know about this. And there's a Senate Bill 1381. Okay, that's talking about a surviving spouse of a elderly person who qualified for a local option exemption. Okay, things like that, you know, we need to actually, and I tell you this, what I really want to do, I want to get some of these people who's running for office and ask them, I mean, what do they know about these new laws? And a lot of them is good laws. A lot of them is good. This Senate, that Senate bill is the one good one, and the one with the franchise tax is good because it's businesses. A lot of businesses don't know that. And they need, once they pass these laws, they need to get these laws out in the community for people to know. We have a person with a hand, with the little hand up, which means that they want to ask a question. I'm going to bring them in. Hello. She's calling from 9147. Hello? You're on the air.
Hello, hi, Varna.
Well, hi.
How you doing?
Congratulations. I am fine.
On
how are
book
you?
Signing. Doing good.
Okay.
This evening. Congratulations on your book signing this past weekend.
Thank you. Thank you. I enjoyed it, too. I really did. I really did. Okay.
Attorney Haley, hi. I have a question. I know you're talking about, you know, with the probate and doing the will. I'm a single mother, and I have a daughter. And so I just hadn't thought about doing a will or anything yet, but I was just listening to you. So I guess it doesn't matter the age or anything. We just need to go ahead and get a will done. Is
yes,
that correct?
Ma'am.
Kind of like what I'm hearing?
Yes, ma'am. Now,
okay.
And if you do have a minor in your will, you may want to look into, because you can also do what's called a testamentary trust. So if
okay.
you say that you could put so a testamentary trust is pretty much a provision in your actual will that says, you know what, if my child is, or not even if my child is under the, as a minor, but you could put that provision specifically for your child as a minor,
okay.
and then you can update it once they become of age. But
okay.
it will help because if you don't have any other children and she's the only one that inherits from you, her portion of the estate will likely have to be held in the court's registry until she turns 18 because technically
okay.
she won't be able to inherit because she's a minor. But you can put in their
okay.
testamentary trust that provision that says if my child is, or you put her name, if my child is a minor at my death, then I want pretty much her to get these funds when she's 18 or however age, and you can say, or that she, you know, certain things are released, or you can, but overall you'll have to put someone there and say you want a particular named person to be the trustee of that trust. So they'll create a,
okay.
so that now creates terms that a person will be appointed and they can manage that money for your daughter or for your child.
Okay.
And then they're able to be taken care of until they're 18 and they can get a release of them. Or you can even say, you know what, I want to make sure my child will be responsible and I don't want to give her all this whatever at the age of 18. So you can kind of do some levels to that. You could do like some step ups and say at 18 she gets
okay.
this amount. And if she completes college and does X, Y, and Z, she gets this. Or whatever you want to put in there, as long as it's legal, which an attorney can help you do, you can put those things in there for her.
Okay. All right, that makes sense. Okay. And then, Ms. Verna, you were talking about legislative laws. Is, you know, and I know we always hear these things, but I'd heard about them trying to get the casinos in Dallas. So is that a law that's already been in place, or is that something that's coming later?
I did the approved ones. I don't see that here. I don't see it here at all. No, it hasn't been approved, but there is a lot of laws, Senate bills and House bills that I really haven't just read all of them, but a lot of them is because it's dealing with taxes and health benefits, but they're all so important. So I do know that we're probably going to end up having some debate with this casino law, but more likely it probably will pass. What do you think? What is your opinion about it?
Well, I think it's good to have it, you know, to bring it to Texas. Everybody drives to Windstar or up through Sherman, headed up to Oklahoma, to always go gamble. So I think, you know, it might be time. Let instead of Oklahoma and Louisiana getting all the money, maybe Texas can keep some of it.
Well, I'm sure they will. I'm sure it's going to pass. I have no doubt about that. I think it's going to pass. Number one, it's going to bring a lot of jobs. and people are just going to have to learn how to reframe. You know, if they want to have some fun, we'll have some fun when they, you know. I have been to probably two boats. And if I don't have a $10, that's all I'm going to pay is $10. If I win with them $10 or $100, whatever I take down there, I'm not going to spend no more because I'm disciplined like that. Now, I have some family members. They'll just sit there and sit there and sit there until all of their money's gone. They'll win it, and then they'll lose it. But so I just think it's a person got to have that, have to learn themselves how to discipline themselves. But it's fun. It's a fun game. I like the horse races. I like the casinos. I like everything. But I only go to have fun. So I'm thinking it's going to pass, too. I really do. My husband, he may not like it because he's a minister, but I like it. So, you know, different strokes for different folks. You know what I mean, Candace?
Yes, ma'am, I do. I think that will give a lot of people jobs. And to each his own, but I do think it'll create some job opportunities for people. Mm-hmm. And I'm always for that because we have a very high poverty level in Texas, specifically Dallas, and a lot of homeless. And now, well, I hope it doesn't create more issues now because, you know, there may be some people that create a different type of habit from this. But, you know, we just hope that if it's passed, people won't abuse it.
Well, you know, they had the horse race track out there, too, so people didn't get been out of shape over that, neither. So.
Okay.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Verna. Thank you so much, Attorney Haley.
No problem.
Well,
thank you for coming up and asking.
Yes. And if we have quite a few people online, and if you have any questions, just hit the one button. And so we can bring you on, bring you in. But Haley, I'm getting excited about this because some of the attorneys that I have been talking to, you probably don't miss anything concerning labor law. Mrs. Edwards, she is the senior attorney with the U.S. Department of Labor. Office of the Solicitor for Fair Labor Standards. Can you explain a little bit about probably who she may be and what she does? Do you know anything about that?
I don't know a whole lot about her role necessarily because it's I'm newly introduced to her through you. But I know when you're dealing with labor laws, it's typically dealing with employment laws, that's dealing with child labor laws, that's dealing with a lot of discriminatory things. So that agency deals a lot with the laws related to how a person is employed and how a person may be terminated, and kind of helping facilitate that process and what unemployment entails on all levels, whether it's child, whether it may be, and I don't know if, and I don't want to misquote, but I don't know if they deal with any like sex trafficking workers type things too. So I don't want to guess that, and that's not what one of the areas, but employment is not one of the areas for me. So they would know that area a lot better, but I don't, yeah. I don't practice that area specifically.
Mm-hmm. Well, she's going to be there Saturday, and I've been getting a lot of calls about people who have a felony and how they are treated on their jobs, and how some people will not hire them, and how some people will not even allow them, even though they're making money, they've been on their jobs for a year, but they still can't get an apartment. They can't get rent, you know, people to rent to them. So I'm hoping that the legal clinic on Saturday will be able to answer a lot of those questions, because it's just it's hurting to see what I'm hearing and seeing too, because when I look at, I just saw it the other day about the state of Maine, how they are actually putting up people for 2 years. The people that's coming in, it said Maine gives rent-free apartments to migrants for 2 years.
Wow.
Now, they will give rent-free apartments. This was a Fox News special that I was looking at, was listening to. And I hear that now they're giving free rent apartments to migrants for 2 years. But they won't even give a person who may have been incarcerated. And he's trying to pay his rent.
Right.
But they won't give him an apartment. So if there's going, these laws got to, have to change. I am really hoping that I can bring on some people that's running for office to see how they're going to, state offices as well as congressional offices, because we need to learn more about how they are thinking. How they are thinking, what they, how they think, what do they think is going to go on? Because I do know that if that should be happening here, that's so wrong. When you have all these people who is sleeping on the streets now, but yet still they will give the migrants free rent 2 years. So, I know you probably can't talk. You can't talk about all of that now, but. On Saturday, we're going to talk about a little bit of everything. So I'm just asking everybody to come out on Saturday. And even if you don't need an attorney, just come out and learn something different that you may need to know that you didn't know at first. Because it's always good to know, to get more knowledge.
Right.
And I really think, did I tell everybody where it's going to be? At Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church. So it's going to be Saturday, January the 27th, at Mesquite Friendship Baptist Church, 680 U.S. Highway 80. That's in Mesquite, Texas. That's between Galloway and Beltline Road there. So come on out on Saturday at 10 o'clock. If you don't get there at 10, just come on when you can, because we'll be there until about 1 o'clock. And, again, I want to thank my pastor, Caleb Turner, and his staff and everybody that works there for helping me out on this. And I want to also thank Pastor Flemings, Pastor Mac Flemings in Freedom Missionary Baptist Church on last Saturday. Haley, I wish you had been there. I wish you had been there to just hear. I know you're a young attorney, but some of the things that people that spoke, that have so much history and know so much history, and especially Norma Wade, I enjoyed her speech. I enjoyed hearing her and everything. So what I'm saying, I'm so thankful for them for coming out, but I'm more than so thankful for Pastor Fleming and the church for helping me. And the reason why, I tell people, they probably asking me, why did you go there when you have your own church? Well, I didn't start in Mesquite. I started giving to the community in the Oak Cliff area. I I wanted to hit home because that particular family in their church is who I actually met when I first came to Dallas. When I was 19 years old, I got married in November of 1969. And I think I joined that church in 1970. I just forgot what month. But anyway, that church, I never had gotten water baptized before because we was always raised up in the AME church, African Methodist Church. So they only just sprinkle. But because of Reverend A.L. Bowman and his wife, which is the parents of Reverend Mac Fleming, they brought me to Christ in they taught me the importance of baptism, and that's where I got baptized. So that going to his church was like going home, I mean, in my heart. So that's why I wanted to have it there with them, that family, because that's where I first started with that family, my Christian walk with God. So it went very well.
I love that, Ms. Verna.
It went very well, Haley. I mean, you know, I am so thankful that I am still here to tell this story. I don't know what to do. I just don't know what to do because I've seen one of my best friends just died Monday. My neighbor, he went to church with us.
Sorry.
And what I'm saying is so many people that's leaving here, and God has still left me here. I got another person who wants to come on air. They got their hands up. Also, let me see. But Saturday was just a big day to me, and I just want to thank Linda Henderson. Shucky Ducky even came by. My friend Cecil, and you know Cecil. Do you know Cecil Smith? Shucky Ducky, Kaylee. Do you know him?
Hey, no, ma'am, I don't.
Have you ever heard of him? Shucky Ducky, he's a comedian.
It sounds familiar, but I don't think
You probably haven't heard of him. But he even came by at the very end. We was getting ready to go, but they all came, and Linda Henderson and her family from Fort Worth. So I thanked all of them for coming out. But one of the things about Shucky Ducky, his name is Cecil Armstrong. Back in the 80s, Al Lipscomb and I had a lot of work to do in the community, and he was always there to help us. He remembers so much because he was a young man, but he remembers. And I want to thank him for coming out and purchasing a book on Saturday and learning and remembering the history. We have a caller. I'm so sorry. We have a caller online that I just click you in. Your number is starting in last four is 4878. Hello?
That is me. That is Marga. Congratulations again on your book, The Power of Three.
Oh, well, hi there, Marga. How you doing?
I'm doing just super. I have a quick question. I don't know how much time we have left, but I've always been a little hesitant, you know, about going ahead and pulling the trigger on, you know, my will. While I have been in the death care industry and I know how important it is to put your house in order and take care of all your prepaid arrangements and things like that, I just, you know, I know that I have just heard some things that, you know, when you have a will in place, that it can still be contested for a period of time. And in some cases, and maybe not all, not sure about this part either, that it would have to be probated. So I guess because I like things to be seamless and simple, I just kind of want to know, I mean, is there a way to have a will and not have to have all the complicated stuff, you know what I mean? I just know of other families that where dad had a will, and there was one executor that was left in charge, but the will was disputed. So it was contested, and, you know, it had to be probated. And I just, you know, I'm just trying to figure out, is the will really what I want if I'm trying to, you know, if I just want things to be seamless? I only have two girls.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for your question. And I'm so glad you asked that, because I think our community specifically, we don't know all the options that we have available to us that a lot of other communities have. And sometimes we don't take advantage of it, again, because one, we don't know that we have it, or we think we can't afford it. And so one of the things to avoid, so having a will, you cannot avoid the probate process. Because that's just a part of having that will. You have to take it to the probate court, and for the court to say this is a valid will, we're going to go ahead and allow the executor to operate under that will, whoever was named. Because what the court wants to do is the state of Texas, they want to make sure that the beneficiaries or the distributees or the heir or the heirs of an individual that is deceased are protected, and their assets of the deceased person are protected. And so they put things in place in order for that to happen. And so one of the things is, and they obviously still want a person to be able to name people that they want to inherit things, and they want that person's wishes to be done versus allowing the laws of the state of Texas to determine that. And so they create the process of obviously having a will and taking it to probate court. Now, if the probate process can be seamless sometimes, or it can be complicated, even if at the end it becomes seamless. And the reason I say it that way is because a lot of times when a person passes away, that's when the children's sibling rivalries come up, and typically sometimes they're fighting over pennies, or they're fighting just to be fighting, or they had other wishes that they wanted their parents to put in place. So sometimes you cannot prevent them from fighting. You just cannot. And sometimes our clients, they want to put a contest clause. But if you contest it, that you only get $1 to try to help people not to contest it. But the law, you know, allows for, if it's in good faith and they have a basis for it, then they can circumvent that clause. Because a lot of times what ends up happening, a lot of people, and that's why it's important to get your will done sooner than later, because one of the things that our practice, we're realizing that there is a rise in dementia and Alzheimer's. It's a huge rise in it, and it's happening earlier than later. So we have clients and have had clients that have come to us and said, you know, we've seen that their parents they either passed away, and when they passed away, they had something in place, but they may have been diagnosed with dementia at the time that they signed that will. And depending on what stage they are in, that's a basis for potentially contesting it, because they may not have been, had sound mind or the legal capacity to the testamentary capacity to actually to sign that document. They may not have known what they were doing. There are a number of reasons for people to contest it. So there's no real way to get around that other than, and I can't even say other than, but making sure you do it at an appropriate time, that you have capacity to do it, and that, you know, that you're in a position to, you know, and kind of talk to your family about these things. I don't think you need to sit them down after you do it and say this is what, or have too many conversations about it, because I think at that point you can start getting their minds and their wheels going a little too much sometimes, depending on the family dynamics. But I don't think there's a real way to get around somebody contesting anything, because anybody has the right to do that within 2 years. From the time of death. So that's one of the things, from the time that it's probated, excuse me, to contest it. And then from there, but to try to avoid the probate process, you can also do what's called a revocable living trust. So that document doesn't go to probate. Typically it doesn't go to probate. There are times when it has to. If it's not done properly, then you have to take it to probate court. But typically,
what is it called again, Candace? Hold on. What is it called again?
A revocable living trust.
A revocable.
And so you. Mhm. a revocable living trust or any type of trust, but that's the main trust that people use, a revocable living trust. But you may just hear the term trust. And so I'll just use that word for general purposes, a trust. A trust can avoid the probate process if it's done the proper way. Now, a person could still try to contest that document. You can't really stop people from contesting if that's what they're going to do. If that's in their nature, if that is their goal, they're going to do that. But the way you protect your estate and the people who aren't contesting is that you make sure you do it when you have the testamentary capacity to do it. And that really is one of the ways to make sure it's done properly. And then you're also not influenced by somebody to make a will that you may not have naturally made if they weren't influenced you to do that. So that's another thing to keep in mind, is to make sure, you know, which is another good reason why when you take care of your affairs, you keep, not saying you keep people out of it. I think you need to make sure, you know, you're having conversations about we're doing our estate planning. You don't have to tell them the details. But I would be careful to allow one child or one person to kind of dictate what how you should do things, because that could be a reason for someone to contest it as well. So there's just some things that you have to look at to make sure you're putting everybody in a position to be successful, and to not, you know, to do the best thing you can possibly to prevent someone from contesting it.
Mm-hmm. So I guess
did I answer your question?
Well, that was going to be the next part. That was going to be part B of the question, because I know that the trust comes into the equation as well, but it's more than just one type of trust. The revocable living trust is one, but then there's other types of trust. And to me,
right.
I just, you know, I don't, it doesn't sound like to me that it's up to the person who is even, you know, leaving things behind. It sounds like it's at the mercy of the diplomacy of the two, you know, of the individuals, in my case, the two girls, you know, to be civil about it, and the court, if you will. To me, and this is just me talking, I just feel like that is, I don't know, it's a little unfortunate, because I know how I would want things, you know what I mean, but it's not as simple as me wanting it, putting it in place, and then that's how it's going to, you know, transcend in terms of what they're going to, you know, wind up doing. It's up to them as to whether or not they're going to fight about something that didn't belong to them in the first place. You know what I mean? So.
Mm-hmm. And I definitely see your position in that, but what the court, their job is to make sure your wishes are done. So even though they can test it, that doesn't mean that they win at the end. And that doesn't mean that at the end of the day your wishes are done. Because typically, unless they have true basis and grounds, they actually have to hire an attorney. They have to be able to afford going to trial against their sibling, and if they lose, they have to pay as well. So that doesn't. So even though one may attempt to fight, which is something that nobody can ever control, nobody can control the nature of people. But the court is still going to want to make sure that your wishes are done and are heard. And so I wouldn't say that, you know, that the people, that the distributees or the heirs get to determine what happens necessarily. They obviously, you can't dictate whether they will be civil or not. But even though they may not be civil, that doesn't mean that they want is going to rule, because your will is still in place. And if they don't have the evidence, and if they are not successful to overcome your will, then your will is still in place, or your trust mm-hmm. is still in place. They have to have hard evidence that you were either incapacitated at the time you did the will, that somebody influenced you to make this will and it wasn't what you would have wanted to do, and then they could say maybe fraud or if you didn't sign it. But other than those things, they really have no reason to contest it, and they have to prove all of those things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot harder than people think. So I hope that doesn't I don't want you to be discouraged to not do one just because of that, because what ends up happening if you don't have one, now the fighting may be even worse, because now they're fighting over things that, because you may say, you know what, I want one of my children to get X, Y, and Z, or let's say you have a house. And so you say, you know what, one of my children are a little bit more responsible, or I want one of my children to get the house and the other one to get X, Y, and Z or whatever. And then let's say you don't have a will, and now they're sharing everything equally. Well, one may say, well, I want the house. And the other one may say, well, I don't want the house. I want to sell it. But the other person may need a place to stay. And now they've inherited a house. But if the other person says, no, I want to sell it, they can force the other person who needs a place to stay to sell it because they both own it. And in the state of Texas, Texas says, we're not going to force you to stay in a house with somebody or stay an owner with someone and you don't want to, so we can force to sell the house. And that's a whole lawsuit. And if that person who wants to stay there can't afford to buy out the other person or come to some type of agreement, now they have to go through this whole sale process. Now, they will get a part of the proceeds, but now they have to go through this full process. And then if there wasn't a will, they still got to go through the probate process before they can even get to this process to sell it. So having a will is far more important, and there are far more consequences to not having a will than it is to have one, and to make sure it's done properly and that you protect, because a part of it is, yes, you're protecting your heirs and your assets, but it's also, and a lot of people don't necessarily care about this, but I think it's important, is the legacy that you leave for your children. Because a lot of times in my firm and I, Haley, Bailey, and Jones, we just did this called a Soul Food series, and we're going to be posting them soon, but we're breaking down the movie Soul Food. And, you know, that's a huge staple in our family, in the Black community, the movie Soul Food. And there's a lot of probate and estate planning issues going on in there. There's at a point in time where one of the sisters, Terry, I don't know if you remember the characters, but Terry is like, you know, what are we going to do about the property? And one of them says, well, Terry, we want you and your husband to continue to pay for the property. And she's like, no, like, I've been paying the taxes. I've been doing everything. We're going to sell the property. And then everybody else is like, no, we're not selling Mama's property. She would, you know, that would kill her. But Terry, obviously it sounds like Big Mama had a will. And Terry says, well, I was appointed the guardian of her estate, which is an executor in the state of Texas. I was appointed, so I get to manage what happens. And I've been the one taking care of it the whole time. Nobody's helping. Well, Birdie, one of the younger sisters, she's not that stable. She doesn't have a place to stay. And then they have the Soul Food Sundays there. You know, they cook. So everybody wants us to still be a family house. But there's only one person taking care of it. And she happens to be the executor. Now, I don't know if that will said she gets to determine if it's sold or not, but she obviously had a lot of rights to the property. And so if there was no will, so she's not having to share that with everybody, and nobody's contributing. But there was a will to say all of this. And, of course, if she's the only one taking care of the property, that's unfair. And nobody's contributing, but everybody's wanting a say-so. That's unfair for one sibling to do that. And so Big Mama knew she was likely probably the most responsible. And so she put that in place. So there's a lot of things in our community that kind of highlight the necessity for proper planning. And so I would still want to encourage you to still plan, although, you know, I understand your concerns. I definitely understand those, but I don't think you'll be able to get around
those. Yeah, well, we have two more people. Okay, we have two more people that got their hands up. They want to ask you questions, so I got to take these two callers. So can you all hold on for 1 second, please? Let me take us.
Yes,
we're about almost out of time. Almost out of time. Hello, caller. Your number is ending with 2116. Hello.
Oh.
Hello, caller. Yes.
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can. We can.
Oh. Hi, I had a question about heir property. How does that work as far as if the person didn't leave a will or anything like that? How would that work with respect to land?
So it would work. Thank you so much for your question.
Mm-hmm.
So it would work as it relates to in accordance to the descent and distribution laws of Texas. So that means, let's say, do you know who specifically whose property it was? Was it a grandparent or a mother or father?
It was a grandparent.
Okay. So in the state of Texas, what happens first is that it goes to the descendant. So that means anybody that that came from you. So it's either a child or a grandchild or great-grandchild. It goes down first. And then if there aren't any, then it goes up to your parents, to your what's called ascendants. And then if there are no ascendants, then it goes to your siblings. So it just depends on who's still alive. So let's say if it's a grandparent and their children are still alive, well, it goes to their children. And if some of their children are deceased, then it would go to their children's children. So it just kind of depends on where you stand. I hope that answered your question.
Oh, yes. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Okay. We have one more question here. Go ahead, caller. Your four numbers is 1825. Caller?
Hi, Ms. Verna. How are you? Is it Candace?
Yes, ma'am.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking our questions. I have a question. Two parts. Irrevocable trust versus a revocable trust. Which one you think will be the best in situations? Because I've always heard that the irrevocable trust, it speaks from the grave. And no one could ever change it. So if you put one in place, you will never, and this is what you want, you would never have to worry about anything because no one can ever change it.
Mm-hmm. So let me kind of speak to that. So the revocable living trust, it can be helpful. So revocable living trust is you can manage your trust while you're living. And manage your property, and you could be the beneficiary of it and receive all the benefits of like you own it. And then upon your death, it becomes irrevocable immediately upon your death, and you can't be changed at that point unless you put some type of powers in there for someone to change it. But typically upon your death, traditionally and generally, it's irrevocable at that point. So that's one way a trust can be irrevocable is upon your death. But you can make a trust that's actually irrevocable while you're living. And you could still be the beneficiary of it and all of that, but you can never change it. And that could be a great thing, but the reason why you may pick one over the other, it depends on what your goals are. If you're doing like Medicaid planning, if you're trying to plan for Medicaid at some point, an irrevocable trust would be necessary because Medicaid doesn't want you to be able to have any access to any of your funds or anything to be able to be given back to you, no matter how remote it may be. So you're going to need an irrevocable trust for if you're doing Medicaid planning or if you're trying to do any type of planning that requires like third-party funding of some sort. So it really just varies on your goals as it relates to which one you choose initially. But again, the revocable living trust automatically becomes irrevocable when you die. I hope that answered your question.
Okay. Yes. And quickly, the second part is if one who's been married for, just say, 10 years, and 7 of those years you've been separated in the state of Texas, and one decided to buy a home, why is it that the spouse still have to sign the deed?
Because, unfortunately, Texas, and it's good and bad. It's bad when you're on the other end and you don't want it to happen, but it's good if you're on the other. Because in the state of Texas, we're a community property state. So as long as you're married and not divorced, and divorce meaning you have a divorce decree, if you do not have a divorce decree in the state of Texas, you are still married. And we're a community property state, which means that anything you acquire, you purchase, anything you acquire during your marriage, meaning even if you're separated, if you are still legally married, anything you acquire during that time is going to be considered community property. So you own half of that community, and your spouse owns the other half. That includes income. That includes certain personal injury funds. If it's like income that you received from that personal injury, if some of the portion of your personal injury includes work that you missed because you were receiving some type of treatment and stuff. That is part of your community property, and that person, your spouse, gets 50% of that. But it doesn't include anything like your gifted or anything you inherit or anything you had prior to the marriage. But it's anything that you, because it's community property state, we're a community property state, you only own 50% of what you acquire, but that could be by purchase or sale as well. So that just keep that in mind, that this is community property state, so you own something 50-50. So I would say you need to go ahead and, if you don't want it to be treated that way, you need to go ahead and formally divorce.
Well, wonder if your spouse didn't sign your deed and you were still married, and said you weren't together.
Well, that so here's the issue with that. It doesn't take away, just because they don't sign it, it doesn't take away their interest in it. So it can be interest on paper, or it can be interest just as we call, like, equitably, meaning by just by operation of the law, too. It could just be the fact that we are a community property state, so whether they sign or not, it doesn't take away their interest in it.
I see.
But the other part to that is I was talking to a young lady, and her husband had died, and she had the property before they was married. However, she took a loan out on the property while they were married. And when he died, and she wanted to try to take another loan out, however, his kids, I was part of that estate as well now.
Correct. And that's why it's so important to plan properly, do proper estate planning, especially when you have a blended family, because the laws in the state of Texas work totally different when you have a blended family versus if you have if your wife is in the children of that marriage, the wife will inherit everything, except for separate property. To a degree, there's a whole thing with that. But in that case, because I haven't reviewed the mortgage documents or anything like that, the title to the property is different. If she had that property prior to, that property will still remain her property for the most part. Now, there may be some caveats to that, but that should still remain her property. But now because he signed off, or he may have signed off on the loan documents, or because she changed it during the marriage, which he probably was required to sign them or did sign them, then his estate would need to sign off on the documents, which would be his children. That doesn't mean that they get a part of the property necessarily, because she owned the if she owned the property prior to, but more than likely if they did a transfer, if they did some refinancing after they got married, then it may at that point have changed the characterization of that property from separate to community. But because I wasn't a part of that transaction, I haven't reviewed the documents, I can't say for sure what they actually did, but a refinancing could change the character of what the property is from separate to community, potentially. So that's why it's always best, before you do something, consult an attorney, because what we're able to do is to kind of assess the family dynamic and assess what your goals are and how we get there effectively and efficiently. So.
Well,
Our
time is up. And I tell you, Candace, I am so thankful that you was able to come on tonight.
Me too.
And really and truly, you was busy all night. And I'm so happy that you was able to help so many people tonight. And they need to come out to the workshop on Saturday to meet you and to make up their mind on what they want to do with their trust or either their wills, and just let Candace help you. Let Candace, the law firm, help you. You're a very, very sharp young lady, and I really appreciate and I really thank you for doing all what you do and for helping the community. But you all, it's time to get out of here, and it's after 8 o'clock. But I want to say this, Candace, to you and to all those that's listening. We have a lot of people online listening tonight. You could always go back in and look at this tape and hear this tape again if you don't remember everything that she said. This is being recorded, so you can always go back and listen at another date or whenever you need to. And Ken, it's the same thing for you. You can save this tape if you want to and always play it back and to hear it to let other people hear it if they like to. Okay. So, okay. But I want to thank you again, and I look forward to seeing you on Saturday. I look so forward to seeing
you
on Saturday. Okay. And everybody know that your office is at, again, it's at 1420 West Mockingbird. Your telephone number is 972-598-0212. Okay.
Yes, ma'am.
All right.
And we may be moving our office soon, but we'll announce the change soon when we do. But that is as of now. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, thank you, Haley. I appreciate you for coming on. And everybody, I want to thank you for tuning in, and have a good night.
Thank you.
Great.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Thank you all. Hey, Margaret.